Chapter 14. The Rain, the Raid, and the Regret. Sunday, the 2nd of June, 1191. I shouldn't have opened it, the friar said to himself as he resumed his journey towards Nottingham. God forgive me. I shouldn't have opened it. Tuck's eyes were open wide, glassy with terror. The rain was picking up again, lashing his body as if nature herself were chastising him for his folly. An hour ago, the storm had been letting up, and the stars and the moon had become briefly visible between the branches of the forest overhead. The friar had been starting to come to terms with his task. He'd been making himself feel better, thinking of all the good deeds he would be able to do with the prince's gold. Hungry bellies filled, hearths heated, roofs mended. Beginning to feel quite jolly, he'd started singing to himself. Hey ho, anybody home? Food and drink and money have I none. But before Tuck could get to the third line of his round, something interrupted him. The fat friar froze. The donkey stopped, its ears pricked. Neither man nor beast could deny it. The sound was coming from the box. The friar climbed down and moved to the back of the cart. He climbed up and examined it. Please help me. He dug his fingernails into the lip of the lid and pulled. It didn't budge. He looked around the cart. A hammer and chisel had been left beside the box. The tool bit into the wood, and with a good heave, he felt the iron nails begin to give. Help me, please. The lid sprang open. Inside was the burnt corpse of a screaming... Was it a woman? She was in silver chains. Tuck found himself unable to move. The woman continued to scream. It seemed to stir the wind itself. A drop from the soaked canopy above fell on the charred remains of the woman's leg, and where it fell, soft pink flesh returned. Another drop landed on her neck and ran down her chest, leaving a trail of newly healed skin. A third drop hit the slit where her mouth used to be. Her top lip was restored, soft and pink. What? This was some unholy dark magic. He was sure of it. Not meant for the eyes of Christian men. The friar quickly fastened the lid back into place, hammering the nails down harder and deeper than before. In the hour that had passed since, Tuck had tried to explain away what he had witnessed, but he simply couldn't do it. He'd only had one flagon of ale with dinner. He didn't feel hot, and madness didn't run in his lineage. I shouldn't have opened it, he muttered again, the heavens opening once more. Every now and then, he heard the chilling plea for water from the box on the back of the car. The night had become even merrier after Adam and Will had had their chat. Adam felt lighter for sharing his fears. Not even the evening's worsening weather could dampen the camp's chief activity, learning their new song. The deluge was, for the most part, kept at bay by the thick canopy of trees above. Music, rather than rain, filled the air. We took his gold, we took his silver, and left him with breeches so brown, so brown. We left him with breeches so brown. Every man in the encampment had learnt it by now, and they'd even split into rather impressive harmonies. "For if you mess with Robin Hood, the only mess'll be yours. We'll take your riches into the wood and not give a fig for the laws. While we leave you with breeches so brown, we'll leave you with breeches so brown." The singing was so loud that not one of the merry men heard the sound of approaching hooves. Sir Guy entered the forest with a posse of 10, all on horseback. The sheriff had been true to his word. As soon as Sir Guy had sobered up, he had been allowed to take his pick of the men that guarded the castle. He had chosen all crossbowmen. The crossbow was a modern piece of technology that turned every half-decent shot with a longbow into a sharp shooter. Its compact design also made it much easier to fire from horseback. The ride had been cold, wet, and miserable, though Sir Guy seemed in excellent spirits.
"That's their clearing, through there," whispered the thin, frail man who was sharing Sir Guy's saddle. "Now, please, will you let my boy go?"
"Of course I shall, dear man. Sir Guy always keeps his promises."
The frail man swung from the saddle and ran away into the darkness beyond. Sir Guy steered his horse around and looked at his men.
"Boats ready."
The sound of singing melded with the winding of 10 crossbows.
"Leave you with breeches so brown, we'll leave you with breeches so brown." "On my leave," Sir Guy said, drawing his sword.
The mounted knight charged into the clearing, closely followed by his armed troop.
"All right, everyone. Hands in the air,"
Sir Guy shouted triumphantly. John instinctively reached for the bow next to him.
"Please keep reaching, big man. Give me an excuse."
John slowly raised his hands. He was joined by every other not-so-merry man in the clearing.
"Where is he?"
Sir Guy scanned the outfit, looking for the man who had accosted him and the Lady Marian. It was not an easy task. All the men had the same red hood.
"I suppose I'll just have to start killing."
"No need. Brave Sir Guy. I'm here. Welcome to Sherwood Forest."
Adam walked out from the men, keeping the fire at his back, hood up, hands held high, every part of him playing the mysterious outlaw. He took in Sir Guy, noting that he was now sober, and so far more dangerous. Sword in one hand and crossbow in the other, Sir Guy's eyes were ablaze with triumph.
"Terrible day for it," Adam offered, cocking his head to the sky. "How did you find us?"
The outlaw's calm demeanour made Sir Guy's blood boil.
"You're a criminal," he spat. "The people want justice. They've turned on you, Robin Hood."
"Is that so?" asked Adam. His manner was one of mild interest, as if Sir Guy had just given him a gardening tip. He began walking towards Sir Guy through his loyal supporters. "But it was you who took the miller's boy, was it not?" Adam asked.
"What?"
Sir Guy growled, narrowing his eyes. "A miller was in the forest this morning, saying his boy had been taken. I asked him to give us a day to search, but I guess he couldn't wait. I understand. When someone you love has been taken from you, you move heaven and earth to get them back as fast as possible." Adam stroked his chin, which begs the question, "What do you want, Guy?" The knight flushed. "Wasn't it obvious?"
"I'm here to kill you."
"What? Here?"
Adam gestured to the forest around them, smiling. "In front of all my friends? Are you trying to embarrass me?" Not dying was one of Adam's favourite party tricks. It hurt a lot, but the pain and mess of one crossbow bolt would be worth the panic it would inspire in this dishonourable night. Adam looked to his new friends. They looked nervous, particularly Will.
"You embarrassed me in front of Lady Marian,"
Sir Guy declared, raising his crossbow.
Oh, no, sir. That was all your own doing.
Adam braced for the impact. You drunken sack of... He heard the weapon click. Adam smiled. He looked down to examine his wound. There was nothing. No fletching. No pain. Was this knight such a lousy shot? He turned to share a mocking jibe with John and Will. But Will was on the floor, his hand wrapped around the bolt protruding from his chest, blood mixing with the rain. Sir Guy felt the weight of Robin's gaze like a thunderbolt. No one saw Adam pick up the bow. Every part of his being wanted the first shot to hit Sir Guy straight through the throat, but he was still reloading. No more of his band would die tonight. It wasn't until two men fell from their horses, their crossbows unfired, that anyone noticed the bow was even in his hand, already drawing a third arrow. Five bolts returned in fire, but the horses were now so panicked that only one reached its target. It hit Adam in the shoulder. He pulled it out quickly, ignoring the pain. He could already feel his flesh knitting back together. The merry men followed his lead, picking up bows to draw. Three more of the knight's men hit the forest floor. Sir Guy was halfway through recocking his weapon when he saw two of his men ride back into the woods. A hefty staff, swung by John the Giant, hit another man in the chest, splintering wood and bone. The knight's three remaining men had been brought down to two. He spun his horse around and rode for his life, followed by his two remaining comrades. But Adam wasn't watching. He was at Will's side, examining where the bolt had struck him. He'd seen too many war wounds to have hope. Will's eyes were closed, but his hand reached for Adam's. Adam squeezed it tight. There were magics in the world that might have saved the boy, but Adam didn't know them. Artifacts or trinkets that would have closed the wound, but Adam didn't have them. "You are going to die now," Adam said, trying not to let his voice tremble. Will would be scared enough. "And it is my fault." Will shook his head slowly, almost imperceptibly.
"Saving me twice would be just showing off," he croaked.
Adam attempted a smile. I didn't tell you the whole truth," he whispered. "I'm sorry." But Will only squeezed his hand even tighter. The boy's death was fast approaching, and the boatman was on his way. "You will see your family again," said Adam. "Find your harbour and tell Charon Medusa's still kicking." Adam rested his brow on Will's head and stayed there until the end. The men had kept a respectful distance from the pair during this final exchange. When Adam rose, no one spoke. The look of rage on his face seemed to be darkening the storm itself. John had been hard at work. He was holding the reins of one of the dead men's horses, a full quiver of arrows in his other hand.
"I'd come with you, but this is the only horse left fit to ride."
Adam swung himself into the saddle and took the quiver from John, who was eyeing Adam's shoulder. The wound, which should still have been bleeding profusely, had inexplicably slowed to a mere trickle.
"We'll talk about that when you get back," said John quietly. "Run him down."
His face was almost as grim as his friend's. The city walls were in sight by the time Adam had caught them up. He let an arrow fly, his hands shaking with rage. Sir Guy, seeing the arrow fly over him, turned around. If he could have seen under the hood, his blood would have run cold, for Adam was full of deadly determination. The knight spurred his horse hard, and they thundered through the city gates. Adam let loose a second arrow, but rage, grief, and guilt were spoiling his God-given aim. It hit one of the men taking up the rear through the neck. The rider slouched in his saddle and slipped to the ground as the horse dragged his body into the city.
"It's Robin Hood! Sound the alarm!"
Sir Guy bellowed. Adam heard the horn, saw the gates begin to close, and knew his chase was lost. Adam drew up the horse. He had failed. Small orange dots of torches had started appearing on the walls. And then something caught his eye in the eastern tower. A vase of white roses was just visible through the dust. With a strange mix of crushing sadness and a newfound hope, Adam lowered his hood and rode slowly back into the night of the forest.
You've been listening to Evergreen, Chapter 14, written by Sam Russell and read by Catherine Russell. If you enjoyed this chapter, wherever you're listening, please subscribe, give us a rating and a review so we can get this story into more people's ears. And if you really enjoyed it and want to support this project, you can do so on our Ko-fi page. All details are available on our Twitter account, at EvergreenBook1. The next chapter comes out on December the 13th. Thanks for listening.